So welcome to another episode of Beta Talk. You can find this on Spotify, iTunes and various other platforms that pump out podcasts. I'm also doing YouTube videos and you can find them at Beta Teach. And I'm joined today by a friend of the industry. Now, you will probably may have heard of him, Dan Caesar. He's the managing director for a very, very popular show on YouTube at the moment called The Fully Charged Show. It does events around the country. I think it's just come back from one in America. Have I got that right, Dan? Did you do one over there?
Yeah, we recently did one in Texas, which was something else. Yeah, very exciting.
So The Fully Charged Show has, it's hugely popular. It's all about sort of what we're all talking about at the moment, sort of the green sort of agenda, low carbon, has sort of gone more down the EV route, I presume, Dan. But Dan is joining me today because Dan has, like myself, a great historical outlook on the heating industry, which I think is going to be, we need people like Dan to help sort of push the agenda forward a little bit. Dan, just explain how you first started in the heating industry.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan, for having me on. The heating was the first thing I got into when I came into the energy space about 17 years ago, almost to the day. I remember it really well. And I kind of fell in love with it straight away. I was fascinated by it. I'm non-technical. But I just took energy for granted as a kid and as a young person. And when I first went into work for Corgi, as it was then, I actually got to appreciate the importance of the boiler and radiators and heating in general in a way I just hadn't really occurred to me. I think the average consumer doesn't really give it too much thought until it goes wrong, of course. So I found it really interesting, and over time I've kind of fell in love with all of the different technologies, and now I guess I'm more kind of synonymous with renewables and electric vehicles. But I'm just fascinated by it, and we're in the middle of an energy transition, which I think is going to really transform the way we kind of heat and power our homes and buildings and power our vehicles as well.
I suppose I just should say, just in case there is any listeners out there that don't know what the Fully Charged Show is, just explain what that is, what it does.
Yeah, so Fully Charged is a YouTube channel, first and foremost. It was launched by a guy called Robert Llewellyn, who some of you may have heard of. He's actually Crichton in Red Dwarf, and he hosted a Scrap Heat Challenge for many years as well. And he started the YouTube channel about 10 years ago. He kind of slowly built it up over time. And the last two or three years, it's really, really grown fast. And now we're the world's number one channel of its type. We cover everything clean energy from wind and solar and batteries right through to kind of renewable heat. And then all electric vehicles of all shapes and sizes. So it could be electric bike, electric scooter. Electric cars are a big part of what we cover. Could be trains, planes, buses, boats, etc. And the channel has just grown. We now have about 2.2 million audience worldwide. And so it's almost all consumers as well. So it's a great way of creating sort of consumer interest in the kind of technologies that you and I are both interested in.
I mean, and that's a good point, because a lot of the organisations and people I meet, we always discuss how consumers are actually probably the most important cohort of people in this whole thing. And and obviously you're engaging with sort of a mass body of them already, and that's good, because if there are important messages that we need to get to them, it's probably these digital technologies that you and I both use now that's going to help or get that message across. I want to pick up, so you were with Corgi when they anyone that knows our industry knows that Corgi held the register for gas engineers, and then they didn't hold the register, and that wasn't seen coming by some, was it?
That was a fascinating period of time. I was there between 2003 and 2008. It was a really great place to work. It was really, doing some great things, but it was a monopoly at the end of the day. And that led to some problems, because effectively, if you are a monopoly, are you as motivated as you would be if you have competitors? And I think generally, the case is it's difficult for monopolies to stay competitive and stay close to what's going on. I had a really privileged role. I was working on things like the Gas Installer magazine, and I spent a lot of time with manufacturers and merchants and with installers trying to understand what's going on in the market. And I did detect there was a lot of cynicism towards Corgi, and I could understand it at that point in time. And, you know, Corgi was managed, I suppose you would say, by the health and safety executive at that point. And they obviously put that out to competitive tender and Corgi lost. I mean, I could tell you much more about that period of time, but now is probably not the right moment to do that. But it was really interesting to be there when that happened. And it was very sad, obviously, but, you know things carry on. It was just a shame to lose the brand, I think, as part of that process, because Corgi to this day is still a very well recognized brand.
Hugely, yeah.
And obviously GasSafe has picked up and effectively, you know, carried on where Corgi left off. So it was an amazing time and I learned a huge amount. And towards the end of that, I was really getting into like solar thermal and air source heat pumps and ground source heat pumps. I'd already sort of, I guess, gravitated towards those. I really liked the boiler, but I was always kind of very interested in future technology. And, you know, so from my point of view, when I kind of left Corgi, I set up my own business, which was the Renewables Roadshow. So I used to go out and promote renewables and renewable heat on all around the country, actually.
How did you get into that? What made you do that?
Well, my dad was a sole trader, and I'd always found it difficult working for other people. Mm. I think I'd always kind of wanted to do my own thing. And I went to Corgi, and I was kind of trying to, I think, learn how to run a business. I wanted to do my own thing. And when I decided to leave, a little bit before the results of the bid was announced. But again, that's another story. But I was going to things like EcoBuild. So there was quite a prominent show in London at the point called EcoBuild. And I was thinking, this is great, but it really is London centric. Wouldn't it be great if we could take some of these technologies around the country? So I worked with industry at that point, quite closely with Wolseley and Plumstone to actually to launch the Renewables Roadshow. And that was 6 exhibitions around the country in 3 weeks. We used to do a big awards event as well to kind of just get the message out there. And then I actually ended up doing some work for the Department of Energy and Climate Change after that as well on the renewable heat incentive. So I really, really found that a very, very interesting time. But obviously, yeah, any of these new technologies are very, very subject to what subsidy they have or don't have.
So, I mean, so yeah, you were around the renewable heat incentive when it was sort of engendered. I mean, it's a bit of a bad rep, and probably rightly so, but I mean, we all have to learn from the mistakes that are made. I mean, what did you sort of foresee back then? Did you know it was going to go in a particular direction?
Well, you'll remember, Nathan, it was about the same sort of time as the Green Deal. So I think kind of back in that time, there was a kind of a government and administration that were quite pro a lot of these technologies. They were trying to kind of stimulate them. And then there was a crossover point from one government to a coalition government. And I think the views on some of the technologies changed a little bit. But the design of the scheme was interesting. I think in retrospect, it probably rewarded biomass too much. And that became a problem because it meant that people maybe installing biomass, maybe not for all the right reasons sometimes. And heat pumps was something that was obviously a key part of that as well. But maybe it was a bit too early because, as you know, we have like the leakiest housing stock in Europe, in the UK. And obviously, if you're going to install heat pumps, which I'm still a big fan of to this day, you've got to get it right. So I think that as a scheme goes, it was okay. It was a learning curve. And I think they could still learn from that. But I think it did in some ways set renewables back a little bit, because if you've gone through all the bother of training up on new technologies, and then it's not quite worked out for whatever reason, that's difficult. The government didn't put a lot of money behind that scheme. It was pretty low profile. And actually, if you compare the Green Deal, I think they invested a couple of million, I think, on promoting that. I think the renewable heat incentive was much, much smaller. So it was a good plan, but I think like any plan, it needs to be adapted and evolved. And of course, it kind of withered on the vine a little bit. And that wasn't just renewable heat. Also, you've seen the same with solar PV and other technologies that the government have kind of withdrawn support from over a period of time.
Do you sort of still keep your ear to the ground with sort of the development of current policy?
Yeah, we do. I mean, the Fully Charged Show is mainly concentrated on consumers. We do. I think that I've had time where I've done public affairs work for Corgi. I also work for a fuel cell company called Ceres Power, who some of your audience might be aware of, and I lobbied for them as well. So I'm pretty aware of what's going on in that sphere. At the moment, the bulk of what we're doing really is focusing on getting consumers excited about different technologies. So it'll be interesting to see how these things develop. Obviously, there was an election late last year, and the talk at the start of this year around, you know, all the different technologies, clean technologies that we look at was pretty positive. And clearly with coronavirus, you know, priorities are getting the nation back up and running again. At the moment, it's not really around around that sort of thing. But I know from listening to one of your sessions that they've obviously changed the heat pump incentive a little bit very recently, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously trying to sort of get lots more infused. I mean, it always comes back down to, like I say, the consumers. I mean, they're trying to obviously get sort of some more enthusiasm around heat pumps. I mean, within industry, I don't know, it's full of manufacturers, and they're obviously realising around the corner could be a big sort of drive to sell their products, basically. Yeah. I mean, I always wonder whether consumers, can we get them involved in policy somehow? Because it's their homes, you know, that and like you said, we've got a very diverse housing stock. You know, we've got the oldest housing stock in Europe. And, you know, there's all different sorts of people. It's a very diverse population we've got, probably one of the most diverse in the world. I mean, should we be engaging with them more about what they want? I don't know. I mean, obviously, a lot of our policy, or the people lobbying for policy, is just manufacturer-based.
It's really interesting, isn't it? I think the progress in electric cars over the last 5 years has caught the establishment manufacturers off guard a little bit. The speed at which the lithium-ion battery has improved in terms of cost, in terms of energy density, means you can now get a relatively affordable electric car that can do 300 miles. And the traditional car manufacturers have kind of realize they have to compete, but obviously it takes about, I think from what I hear, about 7 years really to go through the whole cycle with a new car. So what's interesting, I think, is that the manufacturers that have really embraced it are doing well now, but those that haven't are kind of looking over their shoulders saying, well, you know, we've got to play catch up here. I think there's some brilliant heating manufacturers in the UK. I've had the pleasure of working with many of them. And many of them have, you know, heat pumps and things like that as part of their range. But it's kind of quite difficult. It's a bit like cutting your own leg off, isn't it? Mm. When you go and you want to sell boilers, for example, but someone asks you for a heat pump, it'd be all too easy to say, well, actually, no, stick with a boiler. So is there really an incentive? And I think what we can do as a channel is Fully Charged, and what we can do is kind of generate consumer interest, you know, ground up consumer interest. So consumers are asking installers for these technologies more, but equally, so consumers are saying to their politicians, look, why aren't you, you know, backing the new kind of breed of technologies that we're going to heat and power our house with? And that's where we can play a part. But industry, I would say, embrace it if you can. I know it's easier said than done. I know that. I know the complexities. I was listening to a great podcast you did the other day about what it means for training and all the rest of it. But I was there when I think it was Part L regs changed in 2005. And those were my first conversations with manufacturers and merchants. How are you going to handle this? And they were, you know, concerned, but industry came together because of government intervention, because of a statutory instrument, made a change, and actually the consumer barely noticed the thing. So it is possible. And I hope that, you know, Fully Charged is an international channel. So we're looking with interest what they're doing in Holland about they're not linking up new builds now to gas. But the Dutch have got a permanent reminder. They're at sea level. Mm. You know, they've got a permanent reminder of climate change right all around them. So they're motivated in a slightly different way. But I'd love to think in the UK that, you know, installers and contractors and industry as a whole can say actually that there's a big opportunity here. Let's be part of that solution. Because there are car companies now who have gone early in electrifying, who are reaping the benefits, and there are those that haven't and are now, as I say, desperately playing catch up.
So what's interesting, so within the heating industry, what they say one of the things that puts people off a low-carbon technology like heat pumps is cost. And there's always this thing about the payback, you know, how long will it take to pay back? And it's an interesting concept, because obviously people go out and buy cars, quite expensive cars.
Yeah.
And no one actually says to them, well, how long is it going to take you to pay back that car and what have you said? And obviously, a lot of your audience would be sort of early adopters, I suppose, to the technology of the car, I suppose. And what prevents a consumer sort of spending maybe, I don't know, £10,000 on a heat pump system to heat their home? And obviously heating for a certain age group is life and death. You know, when you get into your 80s and 90s, being warm can be a life and death situation. Well, but yeah, they're prepared to spend quite a few thousand on a car.
Well, there's two or three things, really. I mean, I appreciate the importance of the boiler. I appreciate the importance of the heat pump, but you put them side by side with a nice looking car, and you know, cars have an allure and a desire that marketeers dream of. You know, that's the jobs all marketeers want to do is car advertising. So maybe not now. So you know, that's something that they have in spades. Then of course you've got that kind of resistance internally. If you spoke to someone and you said, I'm interested in the heat pump, is there enough information out there that you're going to get the right information to make that a seamless install? I mean, I would say at the moment, it's a bit like going into a car dealership through a few years ago and asking for an electric vehicle. They're typically just going to say, well, no, you should consider our petrol engine car, sir. And that's natural. I totally get why that happens. And the other thing is cost is an issue, but you're quite right. Huge amount of car sales every year, but the majority of them in the UK are leased. That has flipped around significantly since the financial crash of 2008. And I would say that trend is only going to deepen. But it's something like 4 out of 5 cars now are bought on some sort of purchase agreement.
Well, it's interesting because they're talking about maybe doing that in the heat as a service, aren't they?
I personally think that's where it will go. I think there's someone younger and much more intelligent than me that will come forward with something like a Spotify, if you like, for the heating industry, a Hotify, you know, someone who'll have an algorithm who will say, you know, this is the house, this is what it looks like. All the details are already input to Zoopla or Rightmove or something like that. We know the age of the property, we know it's EPC, perhaps a more sophisticated version of that, and they'll actually be able to tell you what products you could get installed. And then there'll be someone, they'll press a button and say, I want this installation done. And someone will come in and do that. I mean, it might sound fanciful, but you only have to go back a few years and look at the technological progress we've made with touchscreens, for example. Something that seemed insane, you know, 12, 13, 14 years ago is now absolutely second nature to us.
And that'll be something like in Robert Llewellyn's Red Dwarf program.
I remember watching Minority Report, which is a film that I really like, and it had, predicted crimes, they had touch screens, they had a whole bunch of other technology. And at the time, I think that was released about 2002, it was like the stuff of fiction. Mm. Actually, I think all bar one of those technologies now exists in the real world. Mm. So the speed of technology change is only actually accelerating. And I think it's a brave man to predict what 2030 will look like. But I think we are now at the point where electricity, the grid in the UK is changing rapidly. So in 2012, about 5% of UK grid was coming from hydroelectric, solar and wind. That's now 30%. In terms of electric cars, interest in those is, or purchase of those is kind of reaching the bottom of that exponential curve now. And in places like Norway, 6 out of 10 cars now bought are electric. So it's coming here as well. So really a lot more focus will be on heating. Heating's hard. You know, it's often called, you know, the Cinderella of the industry. It's a great thing to be in, but it is hard to do it. And you know, boiler manufacturers have got more and more efficiencies out of their technologies. There will be calls for hydrogen. There'll be calls for heat pump. There'll be calls for other electrification technologies. And I think we probably need some of all of those things to kind of decarbonize. But it is going to change. And as I say, someone really smart with an algorithm will come along with you know, heat as a service, where you buy, you know, don't spend anything, don't put anything down, maybe, or maybe a small deposit, but you pay back over time in exchange for a system. I think the solar power purchase agreements that energy firms have been rolling out over the last few years is a good example of that.
Now, you mentioned when you were working at Corgi. Now, Corgi used to have a magazine, didn't they, that became the precursor to a very sort of influential magazine known to at the moment called Installer. But that's where that magazine came from, isn't it?
Well, yeah. So I've got a copy. So you might, it's a very faded. This is 13 years old. But this, for me, was kind of quite, it was a copy we commissioned, a cover we commissioned. And the idea really was that Installers were the vital link between consumers and renewables.
Is that the first one then? Is that the first
ever? No, it was going for a long time before that, but we did various special issues. But, yeah. You know, for us, we felt that the gas installer was in a great place to kind of take, you know, renewable heat into homes. I think equally there will be quite a few electrical contractors who would consider that as well. I think there will be some competition actually in future years. I think quite often this whole argument's been framed as gas boilers versus heat pumps. And I think the actual reality might be gas versus electricity. I think that there are other ways to electrify. I think hydrogen has got, you know, green hydrogen in particular has got a great future. You know, making gas boilers more and more efficient is great, but at some point we have to kind of, you know, face that things are changing. You know, Greta Thunberg is not of retirement age. Yeah. This is not going to go away. The pressure is not going to go away against fossil fuels, and that is a reality. And so I'm hoping that the manufacturers I've worked with over the years will kind of embrace that change and you know, try and do more in the new technology arena.
I always sometimes put some of the engineers I chat to on the spot. Have you got any favourite manufacturers in the sort of heating sector, or ones that sort of jump out to you? You remembered engaging with quite a lot.
Well, I mean, I remember. I work with a great deal actually, and I've got to say it's a brilliant industry. There's some amazing people in it. When it came to the manufacturers, Worcester Bosch were kind of, you know, and still are absolutely fantastic, you know, company and produce great products. Had a lot of time for Viessmann as well. That was they've got great products. They're very kind of forward thinking in their outlook. We spoke the other day and I remember vividly when AD started, you know, they started advertising in the installer magazine. So I've worked with a lot of these companies and they're all fantastic actually, and real kind of unsung heroes of British life. But I think that's because we've kind of taken heating for granted, and that's kind of a shame actually. I think every kid should know, unlike me, every kid should know that, you know, where the power's coming from to their house. The fact that, you know, for an old power station you lose 65% of that energy by the time it gets to your house. They should know, you know, what the boiler's doing or other heat technology is doing. They should know that maybe turning the thermostat down a degree or two is probably a good thing to do. But we don't. We just take it very much for granted until it breaks down, which is, I think, is a great shame, because I think it is a really fascinating area. But
it should be in the curriculum, really, for young people. We maybe you and I should chat about that and get that into the curriculum.
Yeah, I'd be up for that. I think it really is an area of interest. We're trying to create more consumer interest in these technologies, but typically it's amongst adults and early adopters. But there's more and more of those people who are quite tech savvy and they're looking at things in a different way. And what I would say, and I think the thing that probably needs to be factored into this, is that people won't believe this necessarily, but I'm absolutely confident this will be the case. By 2030, because there's supposed to be a ban on the sale of new petrol and diesel cars by 2035. The government are looking to maybe bring that forward to 2032. My belief is by 2030 that will be over. They'll all be done anyway. We will all be driving electrics. Of course, some of us will still have our old, you know, cars, and we'll, you know, get our classics out at the weekends. But this is going to be a swift, brutal change. And the reality is, when you've got a big battery with wheels on your driveway, that is going to have a massive impact on the rest of the house, the rest of commercial properties. People are going to suddenly realise, well, I could hook this up with V2G. You know, I could have put electricity that's coming off solar panels directly into that. I could, you know, think about what I'm doing. Maybe I should look at heat pumps. Maybe I should look at some interesting things going on with thermal storage right now, you know, and change energy provider. Typically, our audience, they either get an electric vehicle and then they change everything else in their house, or they start the other way. They start by changing energy tariff and end up getting an electric car. So it's quite addictive, this sort of stuff. And I think it will have a big impact. So, you know, from my perspective, I think it's a hugely exciting time, but it is going to result in a lot of change, which I know a lot of people don't find that comfortable.
There was a webinar I watched today on the Future Homes. I can't think what it's called now, but how do you see new homes being built that take into account that they might have a car there that's in the driveway, acting as a battery, and it sort of becomes its own little power sort of it's integrated very much with the house and the grid. I mean, are we going to see developers sort of really jump on board with this with homes?
Yeah, so virtual power plants, as some people call it, vehicle to grid, vehicle to house, all those sorts of technologies are not quite in their nascence. They're a bit more developed than that. You've got vehicle to grid technology on Nissan Leafs, for example. Honda have it. Apparently Tesla do have it. They have bi-directional capability, but they've not unlocked it yet. And the Teslas keep updating. They've got software. So those cars actually get better after you've bought them, which is a slightly bizarre thing. So that is going to be an area to watch out for, definitely. And I think that there'll be kind of big developments in that way. The UK government are pretty supportive of that. Quite a lot of grants are supposedly coming, you know, have been announced, you know, in the space of, you know, car charging for homes, etc. But I mean, electric cars is a fascinating thing because we quite often get people say they're too expensive, and it's all relative, right? They're getting cheaper. How long will the battery last? Will it degrade? Well, they don't degrade at all. In fact, they outlast petrol cars by a long, long way. You can recycle the battery. So there's a lot of 2010 knowledge out there about electric cars. But if you look at the facts on the ground now through the Fully Charged show, you'll see that actually they are absolute night and day to what they were 10 years ago. So cars as batteries on your front drive, or having lots of cars on the street, that actually are have a two-way relationship with the grid is a real thing. Robert's got a trial vehicle to grid unit from OVO Energy in his house at the moment, and a power wall as well. And we're kind of going to do an update on that soon, actually. You think will have a big impact?
You talk about the 2010 sort of mindset. Unfortunately, I mean, anyone that knows me in the industry will know I'm a big solar thermal advocate. Yeah. Hashtag solar heat, we have to call it now, according to my European friends. But we've still got the mindset of the 90s. So in the 90s, when we started to have solar thermal, we only adopted kind of half of the European system. So we brought over the cylinder, heated that up with solar. So the mindset is now that we have to heat up domestic hot water with solar, when in actual fact, it's probably better suited for space heating. Because we've also got this misconception, because the central heating industry is new, it comes from sort of the 60s onwards, and we heated radiators up to astronomical temperatures. Well, you don't need to. You only need low temperature systems, especially with new houses. You know, even our housing stock at the moment is between 6 and 10 kilowatt heat loss. You don't need a lot of energy to heat them up, actually. And so we can have low temperature systems, which solar thermal is quite capable of doing in the winter. And it's free energy. It's completely free, low carbon energy. And we need to change their mindsets, I think. I just wanted to sort of mention that just in case some of your listeners are very interested in the technology. But it's like you say, we're going to be very rapidly changing. And I think the car industry is like you say, it's had some quite unique changes, hasn't it? And has that been the impetus, do you think, to push some of our industry, the heating industry?
I think it will be more and more. At the moment, it could seem like the two are topics are completely unrelated, but I really don't think it is. I mean, I think there are so many parallels. It was quite interesting. There was quite a big debate, and it continues, although to a lesser extent, between whether electric vehicles or fuel cell electric vehicles of hydrogen would be the VHS and the Betamax of the car industry. And as it's turned out, the lithium-ion battery has developed much more quickly than hydrogen fuel cells for vehicles. Mm. Hydrogen fuel cells for vehicles are a great idea, but they are still the cheapest kind of vehicle you'll get. It's about £65,000, whereas for £40,000 you can get a Tesla. So you can guess what's winning that race at the moment. And there's another debate building up in buildings, isn't there? But, you know, hydrogen and electric, and I actually think there's a strong case for both. But the advent of the electric car, when people suddenly realise they just charge their car in at home like a mobile phone, they get up in the morning and it's nice and toasty and warm because they've set it out to warm, and how easy that all is will have an impact, I think, and will skew the world more towards electrification. So it's interesting, but I would say there's actually a world of opportunities to be a part of that whole revolution. But just staying outside of it, you're just going to be it's just going to be something that happens to you. And you should, I think, always think you should be proactive and try and happen to something else rather than let something happen to you.
Well, one of the things that used to sort of put people off electrification was the cost. I mean, compared to other countries, I mean, let's say France, for instance. France, yeah. Valent, the biggest boiler manufacturer on the planet. I mean, if you actually look at their Twitter banner in the UK, it's got boilers on it. If you look at their French equivalent, it's got heat pumps. And yeah. Electricity is a lot cheaper in these countries. So cost of electricity seems to, once again, with the mindset of people, seems to be like a barrier. They think, oh, no, because it costs too much. But as you and I know, it's coming down. You've got these agile tariffs that are very clever how they work. I was talking to someone the other day who runs a company called Homely Energy, and they will look at the energy prices a day in advance so they can switch things on when electricity is very, very cheap.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure recently Octopus's agile tariff was paying you to take the energy off for a while.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it is a fast-changing situation. I think there's about 12 million heat pumps went in across Europe last year. It's not a niche technology in Europe. We're just, I think, a bit allergic to here in the UK. But there are other electrification technologies as well. And, of course, there's the whole energy efficiency piece as well, which, again, got tarnished through the whole Green Deal process. But clearly that's got to be part of the mix. So we don't advocate for one technology in particular. But it is complicated. And for a consumer, I can't blame them. Where do you start? So from our point of view, we're going to do more content on our channel about heat and about the different options that are out there for that. And I think that will generate some more interest. Certainly, the channel typically does create a lot of consumer interest. A lot of people want to buy things. I mean, we now work with other companies such as, I guess, SunAmp, you might be aware of.
We're quite
that technology. I think what they're doing is really, really fascinating. People like Boxergy, also north of the border, who I think are doing heat pumps as a sort of a heat as a service type proposition. And it's really, at the moment, the opportunity is there if you kind of want to do something new. But we're still waiting for that young, bright person to come along with that algorithm, but I'm sure that'll happen in due course.
And another big problem for consumers is, when I meet engineers, they got to know me on Twitter, I suppose. I've got this status lecturer after my name, which means I've taught in colleges. I started teaching in a prison, actually. And I always said, look, my expertise is more around how we learn, how the human brain learns, and how we should be training people. Because I'm very well known for inculcating this particular message that in the UK, we train people to be qualified, which is completely different to training them to be competent. There's a huge difference. It's actually very easy to be qualified in our game. And so I always feel sorry for the consumer. There's a lot of messages saying, always use a qualified engineer or a qualified plumber. And I always say to these magazines, what do you mean by qualified then? I mean, on paper, I look really, really qualified.
Yeah.
But there's first year apprentices out there that within a particular niche are far better than me. How do we know what people know? And this is a big problem in our industry. And I do meet with a lot of the organisations about this training, because they're talking about training in the heat pump and low carbon technology. But I am saying to them, look, you've got to get it right. It's not just a case of going someone into a room and a very technically advanced person delivering kind of a lecture and then walking out and they're qualified. It's learning is a lot more. There's a lot of psychology behind learning. It's been very, very heavily studied, and we need to get it right. If we're going to get all these heat pumps installed, we need to get that training right, because the first sort of wave of heat pumps we were installing, a lot of them went in wrong, and they put people off. Solar thermal put people off. It was going in wrong.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that's the thing. I would imagine that the slower the market is to adopt electric options, the quicker the government will be likely to legislate.
Mm.
So I think the Part L was a case in point, really. I think that the government are loath to, but have ways of making industries kind of make a step change. And the focus has been on vehicles. It's been on power, power stations. It will be more and more on homes.
Mm.
And therefore, I think that hopefully kind of industry will kind of move itself forward. And training is a big part of that. But back to that point about Part L, that all went on, didn't it? Set an arbitrary deadline, April the 1st, no coincidence, I think, 2005. You're going to have to switch over what you're doing. And then industry as a whole, merchants, manufacturers, training, all had to gear up for that one date to make that switch. I mean, I think there has been some talk about not hooking up gas to new build in the UK. I don't think that's gone through, but that sounds plausible to me. Whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, doesn't matter. It sounds like that probably will be where we'll end up. And from that point forward, people will say, well, how do we, you know, where do we go next? And obviously, green hydrogen has a strong case, as does heat pumps, as does other electrification, as does district heat. There's so many different options out there. But at the moment, you know, we can do so much of fully charged and help consumers. But at the moment, you know, we obviously want industry to say, yeah, we want to go back to that. But I can appreciate when renewables kind of subsidy was kicked away before and people invested heavily in their MCS and actually seen it really come to naught, or not see that money go back into generating business for them. You know, you can see why they would be loath to kind of go back in again. But I do think it's different this time. And I think there's a social imperative where people will start going, okay, well, I've got rid of the exhaust at the back of my car. You know, where else can I tighten up my carbon emissions? I do genuinely see that coming. Our audience are definitely doing that. And there will be more and more people who will be looking at that. And it's, as I say, that pressure is not going to go away. So I think it's exciting, though. I mean, I refuse to be downbeat about it. I think it's really exciting time. I think the gas industry has been something that Britain can be really proud of. But I think it does need to evolve. And I think that's, you know, that's the reality.
Well, you mentioned before, I mean, because of my age, I probably come across sometimes very cynical. But the heating industry is full of some wonderful people. It always has been. Full of some fantastic people across all the, you know, whether they're sales, whether they're sort of the bean counters, the sort of accountants, as my mate likes to call them. But it is a wonderful industry, and it could be world leading again. I mean, we were the biggest gas boiler industry in the world till 2016. Now, unfortunately, that's all about selling boilers, and I'm not sort of advocating that, because we need to get away of sustaining that side of it and actually sort of concentrating on sustainability as, you know, the green agenda. But no, it's a great industry, and I'm optimistic. I've always been optimistic. I know I sometimes come across as, like I say, a bit of a cynic, but I think it's a wonderful industry, and I think we're going to do some great things. Well, it's been really nice chatting to you, Dan. I'm sure we're going to do some more stuff together. We're going to be meeting each other soon, I know. And I hope you're all safe, your family's safe, because obviously we're chatting in lockdown, which is quite an unusual territory and environment for us all to be in. And anyone that's watching this, make sure you watch the Fully Charged show, and make sure you sign up to Beta Teach and Beta Talk. Thank you very much. Thank you.